This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
About really understanding materials, understanding who you are as a person, how you see and how you feel, and then getting the tools and gathering the tools to create and articulate those emotions and those sensibilities in through a work of art. And so all of that came together, and that's always been sort of the driving force for me of understanding art and also, you know, the focus of the museum.
Mm-hmm. So, but before you did the Art Students League, did you have an art history degree?
I had taken some art history classes in college. I also started to go to Columbia at night for graduate courses in art history.
Busy guy.
Yeah, so, you know, you're single. You know, you just do it. And I was a bartender, so I always had the opportunity to get some cash when I needed it to get to pay the path to get into the city. And
bartender in New York City?
In New Jersey.
Oh, okay.
In New Jersey. And it was a great bar, and I still swing by there once in a while.
Cool.
And learned a lot. Actually, that's one of the great lessons I think many people can learn is how to relate to people through a bar is really important.
Yes.
But no.
Social
skills. That's right. And communicating. But going to Columbia was really important, and having some really wonderful classes in art history there sort of planted the seed with the art making, the art history all coming together.
So the Art Students League, as you know, I went there too.
Right.
And I'm just going to say a couple things about it, and then I want to open the door with you. I remember having old magazines that I clipped out for my collaging, right? I'm talking turn of the century. And there were ads in the back for the Art Students League. Then I also remember reading in art history, you know, Georgia went there, Edward Hopper went there, even Andy Warhol went there. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was so important for so long. So there was kind of a romance for me, a historical romance around this place. Then when you visit, the smell of Terps is just amazing. What brought you to it, and what was it like when you first went there?
Sure. So I had the fortunate opportunity to study with Frank Mason. And Frank was, again, a longtime painter at the League and spent years there. Interestingly, just as a sidebar, is he studied with a guy named Frank Dumont. And Dumont actually came to Portland for some time. We have paintings in the collection by Frank Dumont, who was my teacher's teacher at the Art Students League, which is an interesting segue.
Yes.
And it sort of
are they
triggered.
On the wall, or did you find them?
No, they're on the wall.
Okay.
And they're celebrating. You know, Dumont was actually a celebrated West Coast plein air painter, came out here, spent some time, well-known at least among the art circles or the plein air painters. But no, you're right. I mean, going to the League, smelling the turpentine, and it's the whole idea of smelling the paint, seeing the paint. It's about mixing the paint. I mean, they teach you how to mix paint.
It is true.
And it's about...
And how to stretch canvas.
How to stretch canvas.
And how to make the rabbit skin glue and all those things.
Yes. I mean, my parents at this time, and I was in between living at home and living in various places, you know, when I'd buy the rabbit skin glue down at Pearl Paint in the Village and, you know, spend hours among hours, you know, mixing that with the, you know, with the tones and getting your canvases prepped and everything. It's about that whole process.
Uh-huh.
It is so important, which you don't learn in your traditional curriculum.
No.
Additionally, my teacher, Frank, was, again, he was a very... romantic guy, and I think, you know, really thought about, you know.
He was there when I started there.
Yeah, okay.
I remember him,
sure.
Yes.
You know, old world figure, and he had a studio down the Village, so even in addition to studying with him at the League as well as summers, we'd go to Vermont for the summer, 2 to 3 weeks at a time, sometimes a month, 6 weeks. I would also go to his studio for life drawing classes on Tuesday and Wednesday nights in the Village.
Oh, boy.
Which was great.
You did the whole thing.
The whole thing. And what was also wonderful about it, Ava, and I think I would want you to reflect on this a little bit as well, is the people you met. You know, this is a community. These are people committed to the ideals of art.
Yes.
And art for the right reasons.
Yes.
It's a very pure, exciting, dynamic place and experience. But it was also not my teacher, but also the people who painted around me.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I remember having one teacher, Rudolph. I only had two teachers, and one was Rudolph Baranek, who was kind of an important artist, actually, during the 1960s. And his wife, Mae Stevens, is still alive. And she's in the museum. They're both actually in the museum and all of that. And they, like, took me in. They had a place in Soho. They were the artists who settled Soho in the 60s, still had the loft and all that. He did incredible critiques. And you know, I mean, but they also, like, you know, he was looking at work all of the time, talking about work from, you know, he would ask you, what shows did you see and all of that. So he was very involved in, like, making sure that you were out seeing exhibitions and, you know, looking at what people were doing. Yes. Did you go all over that building? I know this is kind of a crazy thing
to ask you, but
I was on the roof there.
I've been everywhere. To various parts of it. Again, a lot of my experience with the league was through Frank, and it was at his own studio in the summer. Also, excursions that we would take up into Vermont and to Stowe. So, you know, sometime there, but most of the time outside of it. So I don't know the building as well as you do.
Boy, I just, yeah, I was a little crazy, but. All right, so you had a project at the museum here featuring landscape. You wrote about it. I found it online. And in a way, you are citing your time at the League, and you're talking about landscape as well and landscape paintings that are in the museum. Can you give us a little information on that?
Yes, you know, we had a great opportunity to feature the Irvine collection, or the Irvine Museum's collection of great California plein air painters. And, you know, that's an extension of the plein air movement that, you know, you can trace it all the way back to the French Impressionists. So it was a really good opportunity for us to feature some fabulous works from that collection. And so we thought about programming. And, you know, one of the things is, you know, you're always reflecting on what does this mean to me personally?
Yes.
And I had the fortunate opportunity to meet some wonderful plein air painters in Oregon as well as the region. So I invited them. One of them, a gentleman by the name of Michael Gibbons, Thomas Kitts. So I convened a small group. We had conversations about what would it mean to actually take over the park blocks and create a plein air event here in Portland. You know, this whole idea of moving the museum beyond its walls is very important. And so we did that, and it was exciting and dynamic, and many people came. It was that really hot weekend in August. I don't know if you remember, but people still came out.
Yeah.
And it's about process, and our audiences and our community and our entire board and staff love watching the process of paint.
Sure.
People mixing paint, canvases being prepared and seen. And, you know, ultimately, I had one major goal in all of this, that people are professional artists even in this day. People make a living by it.
Sure.
And you'd be surprised how many people do not realize that it is a profession, it is a meaningful process to go through, and people are committed, and they sacrifice many things to be great artists.
Boy, don't we know it. Now, there's also a faction of artists that, like, go to Sylvie Island and all of that. Are you aware of, you know, people that are traveling all over doing this?
I think I just scratched the surface. So
yes.
I have a lot more to learn on this.
Right. You know, I'm thinking about Stephen Hayes, for instance, who shows at Elizabeth Leach Gallery. I mean, he's really made an interesting career going plein air and going out. And he was even, what was it, painting the view for his drive down to Salem.
Yeah.
And making really reduced abstract paintings based on that. So, are you painting today?
So, I have two young kids, and I haven't been painting. So, and the reason is, as many of you know,
it's tough. Yeah,
it is tough. And, you know, I mix my own paints. I prepare the canvases, as you know, and it's usually about an 8 to 10 hour prep time. And before I know it, it's Sunday afternoon, and I'm back to work for the next thing. In addition to doing events for the museum, but also spending time with my kids.
Do you have a studio, though? I mean,
no.
That's a hard enough thing to just get that together.
But I'm okay with it because I accept that
you're doing other things now.
My kids will be off to college before I know it, and I will have these long weekends, and or maybe I'll be finished with my museum career, and I will be immediately back into the painting process.
Yes. Do you keep a notation as an artist? I mean, for me, I know that making art is many things, and it's actually not just the making of a painting. Sometimes it's the writing about it, or the, you know, notations or thoughts or whatever. Do you keep any kind of log of things that you, you know, might do at some point, or ideas that you have towards that? You know, in other words, creative ideas for yourself that have nothing to do with what you're doing with the museum and all of those things.
Sure. Yeah, I think, you know, I spend a lot of time. I'm very fortunate to have the position I do and able to see some of the greatest treasures in the world, collections, museums. Uh-huh. And so I think I'm always making mental notes of artists, canvases, works of art that I've seen are all building up. And I think it's certainly influential. I'm glad you mentioned Stephen. I'm a great admirer of his work. When I first arrived here, I I ran into one of his paintings and I, you know, immediately impressed.
Yeah. I just think he's an interesting example of plein air, and maybe a little more unusual in how he's approaching things. But, you know, it was especially the whole thing of going to Sylvia Island. I mean, many of us go there for one reason or another, and I think he's kind of capturing that experience. So now you studied art history as well, right? What was your special, how did you get to that?
Sure. So I had the fortunate opportunity to go to the University of Chicago and study art history there. And I had, there's an incredible core of professors at in Chicago, and I was so excited just to be there. It's intellectually challenging, engaging, and very meaningful. But at the same time, I met one professor, a gentleman by the name of Rob Nelson. He's a medievalist. I think he's at Harvard right now. And he really inspired me to think cross-disciplinary when I approached my thesis and my writing. So having that background in economics and understanding medieval art, also understanding or approaching art from an art-making perspective, all of those things together. And Rob really encouraged me to sort of pull those various elements together in my writing and my research. And that was what I ended up writing on. So I'm a medievalist by profession.
Really?
So, but go figure.
What does that mean now, medievalist? That means that you're the Middle Ages.
Middle Ages. And I wrote on the Monte Cassino Abbey in Amalfi, Italy from around 1070.
Does that mean you got to go there?
Well, I have been there, but not for my research at that time. You know, we're always broke as a student, so you actually do it through other sources. But,
sure.
No, I wrote on, it was an interesting moment where I looked at a pair of bronze doors from the Abbey of Monte Cassino and looked at how these doors embedded in them and the design was a reflection of the market forces at play. So, for example, Constantinople, Italy were in intense trading moments, and you can look at all the primary sources and understand all the trading going on.
Right.
And in a sense, that trade and the influence of the East and the West coming together created something unique. And so we can understand a moment by looking at the art. Art is a window.
Yes.
Art is really a reflection of who we are and as a time and a place. And so the art unleashes a world.
Can tell
of
you everything,
politics,
right?
Economics,
yes.
Aesthetics, all of those things coming together through this one work of art. So I looked at a single pair of doors and explored this moment in history.
Wow.
So it was fun.
Yes. But at the time, you didn't have the doors in front of you, but you've gone since.
Yes. Yep.
Nice.
But, well, interestingly, sadly, the Monte Cassino was bombed in World War II. So it's been rebuilt. And,
wow.
Yeah.
So
yes. There you go.
Huh, interesting. So, and did you know when you were studying art history that you were going to end up working in a museum? You'd had some time, where were you, at the Frick as a volunteer?
Yeah. So I was a volunteer at the Frick and the Guggenheim. But my primary experience was at the Newark Museum in Newark, New Jersey. And I started volunteering there while I was going to graduate school and becoming an artist. And that was formative. I mean, the Newark Museum is a very special place. If you've been to Newark, and the museum is one of the great museums in the country, I recommend everyone going there. And that really planted the seed for me in museum work. So when going to Chicago, my perspective was to really give myself an opportunity to study all art forms, or art period. So I had photography class, 20th century architecture, German expressionism, medieval art, focusing on medieval, but again, a wide breadth in my curriculum.
Mm-hmm. Now, may I ask you, why did you choose medieval art? I mean, like, what brought you to that?
Yeah, again, I think it had to do a lot with Professor Nelson and his encouragement and his ability to sort of guide me and say, you know what, pull in all these various elements. Very thoughtful teacher. A lot to do with a symposium and a colloquium I took with him. And
you know what, I can believe that. When I was at the University of Oregon, I ended up focusing on ancient art because of Frances Stern,
who was
the professor there. I mean, she just took me in and made me, you know, like, she just took me in.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I think, you know, when you study art history or study any discipline, it's about critical thinking. I mean, at the end of the day, it's not about facts. It's about really understanding how to explore a topic, to take that topic and put some meaning to it and create knowledge around that.
Yes. So at the museum, as I was researching you, you know, I believe it was D.K. Rowe called you the grade normalizer. And, you know, I know that you had an imposed mission, which you've really, you know, done very well with at the museum. A lot of, you know, straightening out that had to happen, this kind of a thing. At the same time, though, you're an artist. Is it difficult to, I know that as an artist, I have to be really normal and together in some parts of my life and then just be a crazy thinker in others. How was that balance for you?
Sure. No, it's, you know, it's certainly a tension that happens, and I accept that tension, and the tension's always existed. I am am able to sort of, you know, have those experiences, you know, maybe outside the realm of the museum, whether I go on long bike rides or, you know, visit friends. It's interesting. I mean, I think, you know, not everyone knows me outside of the museum, at least in this city, but when they find out, they're like, oh, you're somewhat normal. You actually like to just drink a beer and put a t-shirt on and wear jeans. And absolutely. I mean, that's where I will always gravitate to. At the same time, I think the museum really requires a number of hats to be worn. You know, you're a fundraiser, you're a promoter, you're a curator, you're a manager, you're, you know, you're an accountant. All of these things come together. So you have to be agile and be able to do the necessary work. Because at the end of the day, all that work is in support of art. And I keep that in mind all the time, Ava, that ultimately all of the work that needs to be done is to place a great painting on the wall, make sure people have an inspiring moment with a work of art. And so I'm in service of the art, let's put it that way.
Yes, you're listening to KBOO Portland. My name is Ava Lake, and this is Art Focus. If you want more information about this radio show, you can go to kboo.fm/artfocus, and you can get more information. I have links to almost all of the past audio files and interviews that I've done here the past few years. And I also have been sharing this show lately with Joseph Gallivan. We've been alternating every other week, which is working out well for us. Gives me a little bit of time to make work and do other things. I am here with Brian Fariso. He's the director of the Portland Art Museum. So much fun. We've been talking about the museum. We've also been talking about art, because he's also an artist. I read that Kirk Varnado told you that you could only talk about art history at cocktail parties. But that's not been the case for you.
I mean, you know, I had a great opportunity. Kirk Varnado, for those who don't know, was the great chief curator of modern and contemporary art at the Museum of Modern Art.
And a hot model for Barney's ads.
Oh, he was. Okay.
Yeah, I had ads of his on my wall in New York, my New York apartment. He was a gorgeous man.
He also was a great rugby player. Yes. And I was fortunate to play rugby, so I talked to him about rugby all the time. And you know, at that time, I was a young student trying to come up through the field, and he was at the top of the world, you know, leading MoMA, or at least the modern contemporary area. And I said to him, I said, you know, what do I need to do? And he said, well, if you want to be a director, which you can, he said, you know, you studied art history, you go to the best school you can, and ultimately at the end of the day, you know, you just talk to at cocktail parties, because you actually don't get to practice your craft. And in some sense, that's true to a degree. And I think he was being, you know, sort of slightly flippant to just prove a point that ultimately there is a lot more involved of running a museum than purely curation and really thinking about that. So
leadership, fundraising, those types of things.
Management.
Yeah.
You know, all of those aspects. And I think it was a sense of caution, but a sense of reality. And he sort of cut to the chase. And I met with Kurt a few times about several issues, and he always
was this when you were at the other museum or
I was in Milwaukee. Actually, I spent time in Milwaukee, and I had an issue that I was dealing with, and he was at the at Princeton at that time. He had left MoMA and was finishing off some of his final writings because he had cancer, and he was dying, which tragically. And I said, you know, Kirk, I need to meet and talk. And I drove out to Princeton, and he gave me you know some time in the afternoon, and he was always able to cut right to the chase. You know, it's really great to talk to people with incredible amounts of experience, and he was one of them.
Right. That's really a great memoir that you have there, too.
Mm-hmm.
I've been to quite a few of his shows. I remember Vienna 1900, I think, was one of my favorites. What a great show. All right. So let's just talk a little bit about contemporary art and what's going on now. What do you like to see? What's interesting to you now? Is that too broad of a question?
No, that's fun. And you know, interestingly, you know, I don't get to see as much art as I'd like, but, you know, we have a Carrie Mae Weems show up now, which is really an engaging exhibition, you know, deep, thoughtful, beautiful. What I didn't realize about Carrie's work is how aesthetically beautiful it is. And again, Carrie, for those of people who don't know, major retrospective at the museum now. We'll go from here to the Guggenheim later in the year. But Carrie actually grew up here.
Grew
that's
up here, yeah.
It was very much influenced.
Homegirl.
homegirl by this great city. You know, we have another small show up right now by Volker De Jong, who is an important artist, and Bruce Gunther, our chief curator and curator of modern art, is always pulling in, I think, some of the most important contemporary artists working today. That's happening. I'm interested. I know there's a show up at PSU by Inigo Monglano Avalle. Uh-huh. I think he's speaking in about 2 weeks. I want to go see that. I was also talking to Sandra Percival. She's in some conversations with Josiah McElhaney, an important glass, but conceptual artist who uses glass, about bringing some of his work here in MacArthur Genius. I've known his work for some time, always followed that. So I'm looking forward to that. So a lot to be seen. And again, I'm just...
Yeah, that's scratching just scratching the surface.
Yeah.
So something that was just in my mind right now is I've often, you know, a lot of people want to say what Portland is. All right. I mean, that's one thing that I sometimes kind of roll my eyes at. It's like it's this and it's that and what have you. You came from somewhere else and now you're here. Mm-hmm. But you're like visiting, what, New York like four times a year or what have you. So I wouldn't mind hearing from you. What are we? Who are we? What do we have here that's unique to us or special to us, or what's our challenges, this kind of thing. I like to hear a perspective.
Sure.
And that could be community, but also just as artists, as, you know, what are we doing? What do we do well?
Sure. Well, I think we're honest about ourselves and we're very authentic. Again, I've used that word before, but, you know, there is something very special about this city and the people in it. They're real. They're people who, you know, grapple with the issues of the day in a meaningful way, and they're also not trying to hide behind some form of veil of, hide behind what they're thinking. I mean, people are just very honest, transparent, and straightforward here, which is very refreshing. And I think it.
Did you notice that right away when you came here? I mean, like, or. Was that something that took you a while to
realize?
Well,
I didn't know what I was seeing when I first arrived.
Okay, really? You did?
It took me a while. But
because of the mire of work ahead of you?
Well, there was certainly that focus.
All right.
And there were certainly some things that I was grappling with at the museum that I was wrestling with and trying to understand in a meaningful way. But it took me a while to really understand the vibe of what makes Portland special.
Yeah.
Again, you know, when I travel around the world and you land at Portland as you've traveled, you come back and you're like, boy, it's wonderful to be here. It's great to be home. And I say that to myself. Mm-hmm. And you feel that great... the great vibe here, the authenticity, the traditions, what I also love about, and I mentioned DeMond in my earlier conversation, there's a fascinating, important history here as well with the arts community.
Yes.
You know, when we did Wild Beauty and Terry Todemeyer curated that show.
What a great show.
And understanding Carlton Watkins, his experience here, the great photography movement that continues to this day, the landscape painters, whether it's Hassam, C.E.S. Wood, DeMond, among many others, being here, Alden Weir, and all of that tradition continues to this day, but it's also a tradition that has been evaluated, digested, but made relevant to today. And, you know, we talk about the modernist painters who were here, whether it was Louis Bunce, Mike Rousseau, Lucinda Parker, who's working today. So there's such fabulous tradition here and rich history, and understanding that is really important, and you get a sense of how important this area is and this region and our state.
One thing that I think we have here, and it's been my personal experience, but I see other people have told me about it, is this is a great place to make work, and that maybe you have to go other places to market your work, but I find that this is a great place to get work done. I don't know if it's the gray skies that we have sometimes or whatever. I remember having a conversation with Catherine Dunn, the great novelist, and this was years ago, and she says, I've been a lot of places, but here's where I can write. And I've been places too, but when I come back here, I'm always able to get work done, and I sort of feel like we in Portland have this place where you can remake and remodel yourself and reinvent yourself. Do you come across that, people in the process of reinvention? Was this also part of your own personal story? I just find that when you come here, you have a new life in some ways.
Sure. Yeah, no, I found it personally as well. I mean, I was a little bit on a treadmill just because, you know, working in museums is, you know, not the easiest thing to get a career established in museums. So I was in various cities, you know, building my career and my experiences. But when I came here, it was about, you know, I'd reached a great point in my trajectory and said, okay, now it's time to think deeply and to understand what it means to to support the arts, work on behalf of the arts, and be an advocate for the arts. And that's what's happened here.
And was that because of the situation with the museum, but also because you were in Portland and it was the place to do it?
I think a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
I mean, it's where I was in my life, where the museum was and is, and also certainly Portland.
Yeah, there's something about this place. It does kind of make you be able to step up to your work and to your purpose.
Yeah, I mean, it's also, I would say, it's there is interest, but there's also you can make mistakes here.
Yes.
And it's free. I mean, and that allows you to experiment and to be true to yourself and to try different things. And I think that's one of the most important values of our city is that you can experiment, you can try things, and you're not under a pressure cooker.
That's interesting. Yes. I think all of this, I mean, a lot of people I know have the story of, well, we kind of grew up in public here and we did make some mistakes, but we were able to keep going. Yeah.
It's very human.
Yes.
Let's put it that way. It's very human.
Brian,
and we're honest.
Brian, thanks so much for joining me here. I've had a great time.
Ava, thank you. Thank you for doing this show.
Yes. So I've been talking with Brian Fariso. He's been my guest, and he is the director of the Portland Art Museum. I won't be back for a couple of weeks. Joseph Gallivan will be back with you next week. I'm Ava Lake, and this is Art Focus. I'll be talking with you in a couple weeks.
You're listening to KBOO, Portland Community Radio. Yeah!
As coisas fugaz que há na vida não deixam saudade. Só as lembranças que doem ou fazem sorrir. Há gente que fica na história, da história da gente. E outras de quem nem o nome lembramos ouvir. São emoções que dão vida à saudade. Aquelas que tive contigo e acabei por perder. Há dias que marcam a alma e a vida da gente. E aquele em que tu me deixaste não posso esquecer.